This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of pediatric proximal tibia metaphyseal fractures from the pediatric section on orthobullets.com. Proximal tibia metaphyseal fractures are a fracture of the proximal tibia usually seen in children from 3 to 6 years of age. Treatment is usually closed reduction and casting in extension with a varus mold. This fracture is significant for their tendency to develop a late valgus deformity known as a Cozen's phenomenon that must be monitored closely. This has been a tested point on past exams, so I'll say it again. This fracture is significant for their tendency to develop a late valgus deformity known as a Cozen's phenomenon that must be monitored closely. Pediatric proximal tibia metaphyseal fractures are most common in children 3 to 6 years of age. The mechanism of injury is typically low energy with valgus force across the knee, creating incomplete fracture of the proximal tibia. Again, the mechanism is typically low energy with valgus force across the knee, creating incomplete fracture of the proximal tibia. These injuries can also result from torsional injury, and a classic mechanism is a child going down a slide in the lap of an adult with the leg extended. Associated conditions, as we mentioned, is the Cozen's phenomenon, which is a late valgus deformity with an etiology that is unknown and can occur regardless of treatment. The prognosis of this valgus deformity is that it usually resolves spontaneously. Again, this valgus deformity usually resolves spontaneously. Now, let's go over some relevant anatomy. Specifically, the osteology of the tibia is that it's a triangular-shaped bone with apex anterior that broadens distally. The anteromedial border is subcutaneous. As far as the blood supply, the posterior tibial artery provides nutrient and periosteal vessels, and the nutrient vessels supply the inner two-thirds of the tibial diaphysis. As far as the classification of pediatric proximal tibia metaphyseal fractures, this is a descriptive classification, and important radiographic parameters include complete versus incomplete, displaced versus non-displaced, and the presence of an associated fibula fracture. As far as complete versus incomplete, the majority of these injuries are incomplete, so these can be described as a green stick or a torus fracture. As far as an associated fibula fracture, the presence of a fibula fracture suggests a higher energy. Patients with pediatric proximal tibia metaphyseal fractures present with symptoms of pain and refusal to bear weight. On physical exam, patients usually have minimal soft tissue swelling or deformity, however, evaluate carefully for compartment syndrome. As far as imaging, recommended views on radiographs include an AP and a lateral of the tibia. Findings may include incomplete versus complete fractures, presence of any angulation, which is usually valgus, and the presence of a proximal fibula fracture, which may indicate a more unstable fracture pattern. Treatment of these injuries can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management can include a long leg cast and extension with a varus mold, or reduction and then a long leg cast and extension with a varus mold. A long leg cast and extension with a varus mold is indicated for non-displaced fractures. The technique is placing the cast with the varus mold and aim for slight overcorrection. Casts are maintained for 4 to 6 weeks with serial radiographs, and then weight bearing may be allowed after 2 to 3 weeks. Reduction and then a long leg cast and extension with a varus mold is indicated for displaced fractures. As far as the technique, the reduction is usually done under conscious sedation, and then casting is done the same way as we just described. Operative options include an open reduction. The indications are rare, however, they are indicated when there's an inability to adequately reduce a displaced fracture or secondary to soft tissue interposition. As far as the modalities, open reduction is typically done through a limited open dissection to remove interposed soft tissue, and then you will do casting in near full extension with or without supplemental K-wire fixation. Let's go over these management techniques again in a little bit more detail. Closed reduction is usually performed under conscious sedation. An angulated green stick fracture is completed to aid in reduction, and then the cast is placed in near full extension with the 3-point varus mold. An open reduction is done through a small medial incision over the fracture site, and the reduction will involve removal of interposed soft tissue that is either periosteum, the Pes tendons, and/or the MCL. Then you will obtain an anatomic reduction under direct visualization, and then you may supplement this with crossed K-wires. Postoperatively, you will place these patients into a well-molded cast. Some complications to discuss include, of course, the valgus deformity known as the Cozen phenomenon and limb length discrepancy. Valgus deformity, or the Cozen's phenomenon, has an incidence as high as 50 to 90%, and it develops 5 to 15 months after the injury, and the maximum deformity is observed at 12 to 18 months. Risk factors include incomplete reduction, concomitant injury to the proximal tibia physis, infolded periosteum, injury to the pes anserinus insertion with loss of proximal tibia physial tether leading to asymmetric physial growth. Treatment of Cozen's phenomenon can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management involves observation, so this condition may be observed for 12 to 24 months with expectation of spontaneous correction in most cases, although some patients may have a persistent valgus deformity. Remember that parents should be counseled of this complication in advance. The worst deformity is at 18 months with an average valgus deformity of 18 degrees. Gradually, this deformity resolves by 3 years with an average clinically irrelevant residual deformity of 6 degrees. Keep in mind that this complication can result in an S-shaped tibia and persistent mechanical access line that passes lateral to the center of the knee. Operative options for Cozen's phenomenon include guided growth versus osteotomy. This is reserved for valgus deformities greater than 15 to 20 degrees near skeletal maturity. Options include a varus-producing proximal tibia and fibula osteotomy or medial proximal tibia epiphyseodesis. Moving on to limb length discrepancy, the affected tibia is often longer with an average of 9 millimeters. Typically, this does not require intervention. However, parents should be counseled that this does not resolve. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 5-year-old boy sustained a proximal tibia fracture. He is treated in a cast, and his parents are counseled that within the next year he is at higher risk of developing a limb deformity, even if he has no issue with fracture union. What is the preferred initial treatment if this deformity occurs? And the choices are 1. Observation, 2. Medial proximal tibial epiphyseodesis, 3. Lateral proximal tibial epiphyseodesis, 4. Osteotomy and correction with a spatial frame, and 5. Osteotomy and correction with internal fixation. The correct answer to this question is 1. Observation. So this patient sustained a proximal tibia fracture, and this injury classically develops a valgus deformity, also known as Cozen's fracture, and commonly resolves with observation. To quickly review, proximal tibia metaphyseal fractures have been known to develop a late valgus deformity. This is known as Cozen's fracture or phenomenon. It most commonly occurs in children 3 to 6 years of age. It is theorized to be from medial physial overgrowth. The angular deformity resolves spontaneously the majority of the time. However, a 9 mm average leg length discrepancy may persist. The parents of a child sustaining this injury should be counseled in advance of this potential issue. If this deformity fails to resolve, a medial hemiepiphyseodesis in a skeletally immature patient may be indicated. Zions et al. Reviewed 7 cases of children with post-traumatic tibia valga. They found that the valgus deformity appeared to progress during the period of fracture healing as well as after union of the fracture, as determined clinically and radiographically. The angulation progressed most rapidly during the first year following the injury and then continued at a slower rate for up to 17 months. They found that the deformity corrected spontaneously over time and therefore recommend a conservative approach to treating both the fracture and the possible deformity. In another paper, Zients et al. Presented a child who developed a valgus deformity following fracture of the proximal tibia and fibula, in which quantitative bone scintigraphy obtained 5 months after the injury demonstrated increased uptake at the proximal tibial growth plate with proportionally greater uptake on the medial side. They reported that the valgus deformity in this patient was due to a relative increase in vascularity and subsequent overgrowth of the medial portion of the proximal tibial physis. Moving on to the next question. A 4-year-old girl has knee pain after a fall. Examination reveals tenderness about the proximal tibia with modest deformity. She has no neurovascular deficits. A radiograph shows a proximal tibia metaphyseal fracture. What should her parents be told? And the choices are 1. The injury will do well with treatment in a knee immobilizer. 2. The injury will do well with immobilization in a long leg cast. 3. Long leg cast immobilization and reduction is recommended, but she may develop a deformity that always requires surgical correction. 4. Long leg cast immobilization and reduction is recommended, but she may develop a deformity. However, if deformity develops, there is a significant chance it will resolve spontaneously. And 5, surgery is indicated to prevent deformity that may follow with this injury. The correct answer to this question is 4. Long leg cast immobilization and reduction is recommended, but she may develop a deformity. However, if the deformity develops, there is a significant chance it will resolve spontaneously. So the patient has a so-called Cozen fracture, and she is at significant risk for post-traumatic genu valgum deformity. However, long-term studies have shown that when such a deformity occurs, it frequently resolves spontaneously, and therefore surgical intervention to try and prevent the deformity is not advised. And moving on to the final question. A 6-year-old child sustained a closed non-displaced proximal tibia metaphyseal fracture 1 year ago. She was treated with a long leg cast and varus mold, and the fracture healed uneventfully. She now has a 15-degree valgus deformity. What is the next step in management? And the choices are 1. Proximal tibial slash fibular osteotomy with acute correction and pin fixation. 2. Proximal tibial slash fibular osteotomy with gradual correction and external fixation. 3. MRI of the proximal tibial physis. 4. Medial proximal tibial hemiepiphyseodesis. And 5. Continued observation. The correct answer to this question is 5. Continued observation. So the tibia has grown into valgus secondary to the proximal fracture. This occurs in about 1/2 of these injuries, and maximal deformity occurs at 18 months post-injury. The deformity gradually improves over several years with minimal residual deformity. Therefore, treatment at this age is unnecessary, and there is a high rate of recurrence and complications regardless of technique. The valgus deformity is not a result of physeal injury or growth arrest. Medial proximal tibial hemiepiphyseodesis is an excellent method of correcting the residual deformity, but is best reserved until close to the end of growth. That's all for this review about pediatric proximal tibia metaphyseal fractures. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that this podcast is designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.